solo adventure awaits you.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
For some reason, a place far, far away has piqued your fancy. You might not know why, but for some reason you need to visit this place. Hello, everyone. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien, and on this episode of Solo Travel Talk, Astrid, your solo travel advisor, is going to explore the potentially magical, the attraction, the connection, the feeling of being called to a place. Set the stage here, Astrid. What is it like to be drawn to visit a particular place?
Well, Catherine, I kind of liken it somewhat to being drawn or attracted to a potential lover or a mate. You know, there's something that triggers an irresistible urge to get to know this person kind of on a deeper level. You've got an emotional or maybe even some kind of subconscious attraction that is instantly there. So I think being drawn to visit to an unknown particular place for, you know, you don't know really why, is stimulated it's similar to why you're drawn to another person. But it's really kind of broken down into two main reasons why you want to go somewhere. And if obviously you've got your conscious reasons, you've seen photos or this has been something on television, Anthony Bourdain has just really made you excited about going to Miramar or somewhere, or the internet, something visual though that will stimulate it. Then also something cultural that you get exposed to, whether it's the music of a certain ethnic group or country, or their art, some artists that you're drawn to, their food, architecture, crafts, something about that particular culture that you really just, you like. Then, of course, there are other people's stories. You know, that's a good one. People will talk about, oh, I did this and I did that, and that just makes you think that, you know, that would be so cool. So that's another thing that consciously would make you want to go somewhere. And then another, and it's almost going to the subconscious, but it's still conscious, is the homeland of your ancestors. You know, everybody from the United States except pure Native Americans from the very beginning, you know, were immigrants. So I think there's just more and more of a pull to understand that, especially now with all the DNA tests. Mm. I know myself, I took the National Geographic test that they introduced about, oh, I think it was about 12 years ago, and it was part of their, what's called their Human Genome Project. And what they're doing is creating a database of people's DNA, and they're tracking the DNA from where your line started and how it went through the different areas of the world up into where you are now. I did that. I thought that was very interesting. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people have an interest now of their homeland and their other things that are being focused on culture and who you are. So that is something that I think also will pique your interest. Any one of these things, plus others that I haven't shared with you, will start you dreaming or yearning to visit somewhere. Really, it could be just also kind of a born to roam type of personality, a gypsy in your soul or whatever. So whatever the genesis is that starts you yearning, it really won't stop until ultimately I think you do travel to these certain places. A call, a place, or something really that's tugging on you. Most of the time, people will make that happen if it's possible for them. Before, and I do want to talk about one other concept that I think is very interesting that does tie into this particular question, is there is a concept of what they call soul home or soul houses or soul places. And a soul house or soul home are places where you instantly feel comfortable. And it just feels like home, like I was talking about earlier. the right husband or the right mate. I know when I first met my husband, and our first time we went to dinner, I just kind of knew. This guy is just, I mean, he's a man. There was something that felt comfortable and at home just automatically, okay? So, you know, basically these soul home or soul places, the energy feels good to you. You're naturally more relaxed, happy, alive. Even you feel more rested. And I would say anywhere you get a feel of greater sense of harmony. And a lot of people have written about this subject. They believe visiting a soul home or place has a spiritual dimension for the traveler, something that they didn't realize before they went. But when they get there, there's more that goes on. You know, first and foremost, like I said, they just automatically feel like they're home or they're relaxed here, or there's something kind of like a deja vu to experience, like you've been here before or something like that. But it holds a special lesson, and it helps you with your personal inner journey and personal evolution. And I think more and more people really are asking these questions and experiencing some of this when they're traveling to different places. And I think that's another reason why there's so many people who are traveling more, and especially solo travelers, because then you can really dig deep. You know, you're not with a group or somebody else that, you know, might not want to get into some of the things that you think are moving you to explore. So that is one kind of draw that gives you some kind of particular call to a place. Then also there's a big spiritual dimension to travel, and this one is also growing. It's not just about sightseeing and getting out of town. There have been places all over the world through the ages that are considered just really special places or sacred places, and they have had a strong pull on mankind thousands of years before BC. I mean, we all know of Stonehenge and the pyramids and Egypt and the Americas, Uluru Rock, certain cathedrals and mosques. These things all happened in a certain place. And a long time ago, they were connected to astronomy, as well as what's called ley lines, which are stronger electromagnetic currents or fields that traverse the world. And a lot of these sacred places were built at connecting points. So it makes people really ask a lot of questions. You know, why did these things happen then? I mean, of course, the economic forces and climate and just different things that went on. But still, what have we lost as human beings that the early civilizations were tuned into? So this is another part of just making you want to go. And I think that does draw on some people. And so when you get to some of, you know, I know a lot of people have had some very major experiences when they've gone to some of these sacred places, and others haven't. But still, there is something that I think is an unconscious draw to you that makes you want to go and experience it, or at least explore the place. So that's my roundabout.
Yeah, no.
So conscious and unconscious things compel you, I think, to want to travel to a place, as you call it, the call to place. You have some kind of something that triggers it.
Yeah, well, and you've kind of illustrated the idea of like driving forces. Yeah. Do you think that this draw is enough reason to visit a place? And actually, that gets me thinking, furthermore, what are your thoughts about needing a reason to travel to a destination?
Okay, well, there are many reasons why people want or need to travel somewhere. And I mean, you know, the basically you need a break, or you just want to veg out. You need a spa or a beach vacation. A lot of people find a lot of peace and tranquility just being by the ocean. They don't even like the sand. But they want to go to a beach, you know, so that, and then you've got your enrichment or your learning experiences. Lots of people like to do cooking classes now, or they like to take art-focused tours, maybe even food and wine tours. They want to be enriched. They don't want to just sightsee. They want to do more than just seeing what's famous or whatever. Then there are a lot of people now that are getting into adventure. They want to go big game hunting. They want to hike, ski, canoe, kayak. Me, I love to shop. That's my sport. So, but adventure. You know, they don't want to just go somewhere, like, again, see the big sights. They want to do more than that. Also, along those experience kind of travel reasons, or, you know, a lot of people are wanting to camp more, and they've got a whole new genre or fascination with what they call glamping, which is glamour camping. And I mean, they've got some fabulous five-star tented hotels now around the world, and so that's kind of becoming a more and more of a interesting type of reason and way to travel. You've got your, of course, your African safaris, your photography tours. So there's something, like I said, that on a conscious level has made you want to travel to a certain place and do certain things. But from my 40 years of travel experience, I really have come to believe that there's also an unconscious pull, or maybe even a spiritual reason, underlying every trip. Not just a veg out trip or whatever. I just, the more that I've done it, it just always, it seems to appear, whether I've met some unusual person or I've solved a problem that I couldn't solve for 15 years, and I was able to do it at this place and not where I live in my day-to-day activities. And I have had so many life-changing, small and serendipitous experiences on trips that had a totally different purpose than what the trip, what I thought it was. You know, whether it was a business trip or getaway, sightseeing, even some of my wild shop-till-you-drop trips. I'll meet like a kindred spirit that I'll become friends, lifelong friends with, or I've even had strangers from time to time. I haven't had a whole lot of really scary experiences traveling because I'm a very, very careful about my safety, and I don't take a lot of chances, etc. But every now and then there are things that happen that they're beyond your control. And invariably, some angel or some stranger ends up just manifesting and help me through whatever it was. And I know that was something on a completely different level. First and foremost, it was on a very deep humanitarian level because it was a stranger helping a stranger. I think that taking any kind of trip, I mean, granted, you have a reason or you think you have a reason, but maybe the reason that you went on the trip is not really the full focus on the trip. You experience things on the trip that are really very, very different than just the activities themselves. So I think that's important to be open to and to relish when it happens. Okay, and so then there are other trips that basically you have a specific yearning, like you have your bucket list. You want to see the Great Wall of China, or you want to visit the home of your ancestors, or you want to go to Mecca. during the Hajj and Ramadan. I mean, there are different things that really you think are very important for you to do. Okay, that's a whole nother reason or a whole nother pull, okay? And these are the trips that, you know, are compelling on many levels, not just fun and excitement. And most of the time, you'll make these trips happen because the opportunity, I just find, manifests itself, sometimes just out of the blue. But like I said, to me, there's always a reason behind every trip you take, whether it's known before your journey or when you or you discover it on or after the trip. And I do really think that that's one of the beauties and the mysteries of travel and why so many people are attracted to travel.
Yeah.
Because they experience this. And in your daily lives, you don't maybe get enough of it to make you as energized and you're feeling as happy as a person in a certain way. So if you get the itch and you can make it happen, don't hesitate. And I just always say, just go. Go solo. If you know, that's the best way to do it in my book.
Do you think this feeling of drawn to somewhere can give the solo traveler unrealistic expectations? How can the solo traveler enjoy feeling pulled somewhere and then manage their expectations?
Well, unrealistic expectations really, I think, are rooted in fantasy or fantasy thinking. And you have to not fantasize, oh, you know, this is, I guess you'd say, I use the example of Hollywood. You know, oh, gosh, you'd think Hollywood is so glamorous. Well, when you get there,
oh boy.
And I have a son who, you know, does do acting, and he's lived out in Hollywood for about the last 7 years. So I've heard a lot about Hollywood. Yeah, and it's not really as glamorous as a lot of things you read about, et cetera. I mean, there's a real side to it. One of the ways to stay rooted pre-trip and while you're on your trip to manage these unrealistic expectations is really prepare yourself properly before you go. I mean, do a lot of research. The more research you do about a place before you go, you will have a better trip. It is just, it goes with the territory. So, you know, read the travel guides, Google, read all the recommendations, read everything you can about a particular place, what to do, its culture, what not to do, things not to miss, everything. Okay, so trying to absorb as much as you can about a place. Then, if I have time, I always like to read some kind of fiction. Or even a travel novel or whatever that's set in the place. It does give you a different sense of, a lot of times, the character and the culture of a place that you can't totally get by what you read, you know, as far as facts off of Google or your travel books or whatever. And then, of course, One of my great tools that I always recommend is YouTube videos. You watch as many YouTube videos on the internet as you can, whether you're Googling best restaurants in Venice or what to do when you're in Shanghai or cultural do's and don'ts in Singapore. You just Google or what to wear when going to Paris in the fall. Google as much as you can in YouTube. Watch the YouTube videos because you will absorb so much visually. And when you absorb this visually, it will get you out of unrealistic expectations. You'll see. A lot of times, you know, you'll see areas like Egypt. I know I have a friend right now who is traveling with her husband to Egypt, and she's posting on Facebook. And before she left, she asked me all about it. I told her Egypt is really probably my most favorite destination of anywhere I've ever been. And I told her about, you know, a lot of my experiences. But I did tell her, I said, one thing that was very sad to me is that there's a lot of poverty in Egypt. I mean, a lot. And here was the greatest civilization, I think, maybe that ever was on Earth. The things that they did and built and their whole system of beliefs and culture, it was so sophisticated, and it happened so long ago. So it was just very, very, very moving to me. Well, here I'm seeing she's posting pictures. Here again, she's loving Egypt, but she's also showing that there is a lot of poverty there. So I don't know if she heard that when I told her before, because I can tell that she's upset about it as I was upset about it.
Well, there's some things that you just don't quite get until you see for yourself.
Yes, yes. So if you watch the videos and watch enough of them, you'll see that. I mean, obviously, they're not going to show you all of that, but you can kind of get the feel for that. So I'm a big proponent of watching as many videos. It gives you a lot of information, many times even deeper than what you read. Then prepare yourself for the culture shock. That always happens. So here again, read as much you can about the particular culture, what to do, what not to do. I mean, there's certain things that you don't show the bottoms of your feet, don't chew gum. I mean, to have gum in Singapore is against the law. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things. So just, you need to be prepared for that before you go. So you don't get shocked
surprises
too much. And then when you're there, don't compare this place to where you live. Just don't do that. Try to not do that. You know, what I always try to do is live in the moment. Just focus totally on what you're doing. And don't think about, oh, well, why do those people, you know, blah, 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 and we don't do that. Save that for later when you're journaling or you're kind of thinking about what you learned. But don't do it as you're there. It's a bummer, you know. Try to really live right in that moment where you are. Also, use your five senses. There's been a lot of written about using your five senses when you travel. And that is so true. I think that that's one of the reasons why travel photography and people love to take pictures more, because they're really keying in on what they're seeing more. And then the food and wine, the focus on that, you know, most people love to eat and drink, but they're exploring a lot of different cuisines and a lot of different preparation techniques and fusions. And, you know, it's an exploding genre, but that's through the sense of taste. And then as far as your what you hear, listen to the birds singing in Morocco. I mean, you know, and go to a concert at night and sit quietly and just listen to people talk. Try to absorb where you are with all your senses. That'll keep you in reality. That won't, you know, you won't be thinking that, oh, this place is a lot worse than I thought it was going to be, or this place is just fabulous. Well, it probably is fabulous if you feel really comfortable the first time you're there. But try not to make it more than it is, you know? So your senses will help ground you. Okay, let's see. I want to make sure I love to talk, and I have all these things before I do these. I really think about it. So pre-trip preparation is key to managing the unrealistic expectations. And if you're disappointed and you didn't experience an out-of-body or a life-changing event, be patient. Mm. Your spiritual life evolves when you're ready for it to grow. You can't rush nature. The trip will have sown the seeds for what you're to learn in due time. And that is so true, too. I'll never forget, my son, I took him to Paris with me. I think this was probably about 15 years ago. And, you know, he wasn't that long ago. He was about 18. And, I mean, he thought he knew everything. I couldn't tell him anything before. And I mean, when we got to Paris, that was the biggest shock of his life. He was just, he was miserable for the first 3 days. I even tried to figure out how to get him home, but an economy ticket on Delta, you know, within the next day or two was like $1,200 or whatever. And I thought, well, too bad, Andrew. You just have to just, because it was your idea to want to come with me. Well, a couple of years later, I hear him talking about, oh, Paris is the best place I've ever been to in my life. The people are just beautiful, and the food is fabulous. I love the clothes. I mean, he was just going on and on. And all I could think about is, I wasn't I couldn't believe my ears. But that trip was really a life-changing experience for him. And when he was there, he wasn't getting it on that level. But after he was home and it kind of sunk in and he really began to think about the experiences that he had, it really was something very special and enriching to him. So be patient. You know, even if you go somewhere and then, just be patient. In due time, maybe there's something that happened there or you experienced there or somebody you met could, you know. So I'm a big believer that everything, all your trips and really maybe everything you do every day, there's a connection to it's evolving how it should.
We don't talk a lot about that, the idea that you get something out of the reflection of something rather than the actual in-the-moment experience, that there is a lot to be had, or you can have a different perspective about an experience in reflection, that is kind of its own experience. Did that make sense?
Well, I don't think sometimes you can connect the dots immediately, but they do connect. When they connect. And it might take some time for that to happen.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, now I really want to know, especially with the term, now the introduced term of soul home, can you tell us about a time or a place that you felt especially drawn to visit?
I think I'll tell you about this, about Russia. Russia was a place that I had always wanted to go to. It just really intrigued me. From the beautiful architecture that I had seen, and I loved Russian music, and I just thought, I want to just understand what makes Russia this kind of, I don't want to say scary, unknown place that has always been a power once it got to a certain stage of its evolution as a country. But it was one of these places. I had been all over Europe, the United States, you know, Central America, Caribbean, and all the easy places for an American to go. But I hadn't been to Russia, and I really wanted to go. So I decided, after I tried to get my husband to go with me, he said, no, I'm not interested in going to Russia, Astrid. So I decided, well, I'm just going to go. And what I did was I found I discovered the most reputable Russian travel agency, which was located in Washington, D.C. at the time. And this was about 5 or 6 years ago. So, I started a dialogue with them and told them what I wanted to do. I wanted them to create a bespoke trip for me, which is a trip where I tell them everything that I wanted to do. And I wanted a private guide and a driver, and that safety was my biggest concern. I wanted to stay in 5-star hotels, and I did not ever want to be in a position where I felt afraid. So they were wonderful. They put together a fabulous trip. And I had a list of, and I want to share some of this list because this is not easy. This is not your typical Russian tour. But I wanted, first and foremost, of course, to visit the Kremlin. I wanted to go to the Bolshoi Ballet. I wanted to visit where the oligarchs live outside of Moscow. I wanted to have afternoon coffee or some meal at the fabled Pushkin restaurant. Oh, my God, the Pushkin restaurant is so beautiful. I wanted to shop at Gum's department store and on Arbat Street. I wanted to go to Segev Passad, which is the area about 90 miles outside of Moscow that is considered like the Vatican of the Russian Orthodox Church. That's where, you know, the powers that be in the church are located. And it is a beautiful, beautiful place to visit. I wanted to do that. I wanted to go to the Golden Ring area, specifically Zuzdal and Vladimir, where a lot of the old history of Russia started. I wanted to visit Anton Chekhov's country estate. Mm. He's my favorite Russian writer. So, and I had read so much about him, and I thought, oh, he's just such an elegant person, and I love his works, and I wanted to go to his home because I had read all about it, and he had a special like outdoor building where if you walk towards it, you know, and kiss something, then you get good luck. I don't know, but I really wanted to go and see where he lived and where it was where he was inspired to write what he wrote. I wanted also to take the overnight first class train called the Red Star Express. And I had read about how, oh, that's just so luxurious. They have red velvet banquettes and they serve you champagne and caviar. And that it's just real. It's kind of like what you'd see in a movie. But I wanted to do it. And then I wanted to explore St. Petersburg, the imperial city of Russia, the Hermitage Museum, which is on par with the Louvre, the Russian Museum. I wanted to see or learn about Russian art, what made it, who was famous, and just the different genres and everything. The different cathedrals in St. Petersburg, which are magnificent, St. Isaac's and Church on Spillblood. Then, of course, Catherine's Palace, Peterhof, there's Yusupov Palace. There's just so many things. So I had this very specific list, a lot to do in 10 days. And I told the lady who was working with me, her first name was Oksana, which doesn't that sound really yeah. Russian? I said, I want to try to really absorb Russian culture in 10 days. She says, okay, well, we can make it happen. Oh, there was another thing I wanted to do. I wanted to ride on a troika through the snow.
Well, that's right. I forget you went in winter, right? I
mean, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, that was another thing. I wanted to go in winter like Dr. Zhivago to get the real feel of it. And I did. And it was so cool. Well, when I got there, I instantly fell in love with the country. I mean, I was in total shock at how comfortable I felt there. I did not feel afraid one bit. So all of these irrational fears that I had, they were beginning to melt away. Hmm. Now, really, I had the guide and the drivers, but I really just felt really comfortable. And I did love the architecture. You know, I went to a lot of different performing arts and visual things that I shared with you. And then the people, that was another thing that really shocked me. You know, I'd always heard that Russians are just kind of maybe a little brutish, and I didn't know. I just thought maybe that we wouldn't really click. Well, that was probably the biggest shock, because I automatically love the manner and the vibe of the people. They're a little standoffish at first, but they're very well-mannered, and they're very astute in, I think, just instant kind of character analysis. So if they like you and they trust you, they open up, and they really, in fact, I'll never forget when I got on that Red Star train, the conductor was a woman, and she was about 5'1", and I mean, I wouldn't have crossed her at all. I mean, she was like, I knew that she was a powerful little lady. So she, you know, she says, passport. So I give her my passport. And so she says, come with me. And so she takes me to my private berth. And she looks at me. She says, you will have champagne, caviar, and, you know, like 10 minutes after the train or whatever. So she came back in and she, you know, she had somebody deliver the champagne, the caviar. And then as it went, she came back in, I'd say probably an hour later, and told me she was going to have somebody turn the bed down and everything. And let me tell you, that's beautiful. What they do in the Red Star Express, you sleep with a down comforter. I mean, this is really a luxury overnight train experience. And I was suffering from, well, I always suffer, unfortunately, from sinuses. And she could tell. And she looked at me. She says, I'm going to get you some hot tea before you go to bed. And I'll give you, you know, I think some honey and lemon or whatever. She said, that'll make you feel better. So I think, you know, after about an hour and a half, she felt like, well, maybe I was a nice American. Or there was something, I guess, about me that she felt I was okay. From that point on, you know, I slept all during the night and woke up. She was happy and cheery when she brought me the breakfast. And then when I left, she was, you know, telling me goodbye. But I share that because that's kind of the way Russians are. They don't just like, oh, hey, how you doing, bro, and all that. It doesn't happen that way. But once they are comfortable with you, you just feel like you've met somebody that you can have a good conversation with, or you know will execute, or there's substance there. I think that's probably what I like. So my first trip, I have to say, was the most interesting trip I had ever taken to date, okay? Then, Catherine, the weirdest thing happened to me on the way home on my flight. Every time I travel, well, I have a journal. And so on my flight home, a lot of times I like to do a lot of my thoughts, or just making sure that I didn't forget something. A lot of times I just try to add up everything I've spent and that kind of thing. But I was writing, and all of a sudden I started bawling, crying. I mean, it was ridiculous. Here I was on Singapore Air in business class, and I was bawling, crying. So after about 30 minutes, and I could not stop, and I didn't know why. Why am I crying? That was the greatest trip that I've ever had. It was just so, it just blew me away. And the stewardess came up. She said, well, are you all right? And I said, look, yes, I am. I'm not sad. I don't know why I'm crying. Well, after about 2.5 hours of on and on crying, I finally stopped. And so, you know, it was just so weird that that happened to me. Okay. Then mystery saga continues. About a year, I think it was a year and a half later, I had the opportunity to go back to St. Petersburg on the way to Athens. So I went back to St. Petersburg. I met with the guy that I had there that I really did like instantly. She was such a professional woman, very warm, and I just liked her. I thought, you know, here she is wanting to create her own business, and she was well educated, and the other people associated with who she worked for, she has her own firm now, but I just had so much respect for their professionalism and their intellect and their education and their manners, so well mannered. And it was just very pleasing to me. So I decided to go back and let Irina show me some more things that I hadn't seen. And her name is Irina Orlova, if everybody wants to know. And if you want anybody to, if anybody out there is listening and want a special bespoke trip done in Russia, just email me or put some comments, and I can facilitate that. She and her crew are the best private guides in Russia, and they have done private tours from the rich and famous to corporate, you know, leaders all over. I mean, she's very well respected.
And I usually put a link to their website in the show notes, so that's another way people can know. But tell them that Astrid sent you.
Yes, of course. Okay, but I wanted to go to a dacha. So she takes me to her dacha.
Oh, really?
And she cooks a whole meal for me, pumpkin soup made out of the pumpkins that she grew at her dacha. And it was just beautiful. She was so proud of they had built it all. And she had a little banyan, which is a special bathhouse where Russians love to do in a game room. She had a smokehouse, and it was just an enchanting place. And so that was really nice. And then the Fabergé Museum was just opening, and she was so thrilled about just bringing all those wonderful Russian artifacts back to St. Petersburg. Marinsky Theater, I got to go and see, you know, contemporary Russian ballet. She took me to a wonderful art gallery where I could buy the up-and-coming Russian artists. They weren't quite famous yet, but they are on the radar to be. Then the Errata Contemporary Museum of Art there. Just some really, the Happiness Cafe, which is a real cool, cool place near St. Isaac's. I mean, I did some really cool things. Well, on that second trip, I had the aha moment. It just came to my mind that, you know, the results of that DNA test that I took with National Geographic showed that the concept of these tests are you get your DNA code or map from, females get the from their mothers, and males get them from their fathers. So your mother's mother, grandmother, on down to your first ancestor. And what National Geographic is, it tracks how that DNA, that mitochondrial DNA for females, mutates and how it changes and where those DNA patterns went through the different countries and cultures through the ages to where it stops. Well, it hit me. Almost half of my DNA on my female side went through Russia. Started at the foot of the Caspian Sea, actually went on the western side, the Baku, where Baku, Azerbaijan, then went to Astrakhan, up the Volga River, all the way up the Volga River to around Novgorod. Then it turned west, went through Belarus, Poland, and then Berlin, you know, to Germany. And it just shocked me. I just thought, well, I mean, maybe that's why I like it so much here, because so much of my female DNA had gone through this part of the world. And it was really a wow, a aha moment, to the point where I've written a blog about it. And I wrote this blog about 5 years ago, and now I hear a lot of people saying, I want to travel back to where I found this in my DNA. I'm really Irish. I thought I was German and all that kind of stuff. Well, I got this aha moment before that was even kind of being talked about or written about. But it is very intriguing. Maybe that is one of those deep calls to a place that you don't understand till you go there. And another tidbit, which I think is very, very interesting, is my mother was born in Berlin, Germany. And I mean, I've visited Germany, specifically Berlin, so many times because I still have relatives there, and I've wanted to know everything about my heritage and where my mother grew up and my grandparents. And I mean, I've just beaten that path to death. And, you know, I always liked Germany, but I can say that I never felt at home in Germany. And you know, going back to this DNA line, very little of my DNA was really in northern Germany. So I just say, probably a lot of you think what I'm talking about is a little far-fetched. But to me, it really was a deep revelation and kind of a understanding of my inner soul. I guess going back to the Russians, etc., the strength and the soulfulness and the character of the people and its culture just naturally did make me happy. And maybe it does lie somewhere in your DNA. I mean, I don't know. I'm still probing that. You know, I have some other areas in this path that I want to go to see if I feel the same way. And it did go through Luxor, and I'm not going to go way off onto the experience I had in Egypt, because that was more astounding than what happened to me in Russia, I think. But I'm going to explore this some more and kind of see how much I really do understand it and believe that it has some truth to it. Yeah. I think that this experimenting with the DNA and doing these genome DNA banks, I think people really are trying to unleash or understand these codes. So, you know, to be continued. But since then, I brought my daughter back to Russia. We went there during Christmas and New Year's, and that was a whole nother wonderful experience. Then I brought a whole group of 10 people from Baton Rouge. We focused on classical ballet. We did kind of an arts-focused tour. So, I mean, I must say, my next step, and I asked Irena the last time I was there, you know, I asked her, I said, I think what I want to do next is just come one summer and stay in St. Petersburg for a whole summer. She said, Astrid, I have the perfect apartment for you. She said, it'll have cleaning service, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know. But I must say now, I'm not scared at all in Russia. And that was all an unrealistic fear. Now, I haven't traveled to Tashkent and all those other places, but I'm talking about Rus in those areas that, you know, that we are most familiar with. And I hope to explore all of it, because the mixture of all of these different cultures, East and West and Asian, Middle Eastern, European, you know, even from the Mediterranean and the Scandinavians, that all goes through Russia. And I mean, it creates some of the most fabulous architecture, some of the most beautiful people you've ever seen, so exotic. I mean, all these different, you know, ethnic groups and the way that they look. The food is much better than I thought. I mean, I really like Russian food. It's not maybe quite as interesting as what we have here in America, but still, it tastes quite good. You know, it's not anything that you feel like you don't have enough to eat. So, Catherine, I'll end the podcast with this thought. If you feel a nagging call to a place, listen to that inner voice. And that's something I have learned through my years in maturing, is listen to that inner voice. That is, when your inner voice is telling you go or no, listen to it. Open yourself to the spiritual dimension to solo travel. Do your research, figure out a way to visit that place. You just might find your soul home on earth.
Dear listeners, you know the theme of Solo Travel Talk is to get you out there traveling solo. A packing list might help. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. We also have a place there on the post where this podcast episode can be found. Scroll down, give us your email, and you can get that complimentary packing list right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and really any of the finer places that podcasts can be found, including iHeartRadio and TuneIn. Thank you so much for listening to this very romantic episode of Solo Travel Talk. We look forward to seeing you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.